Hello, and welcome to the IASB's November podcast, where we bring you the latest insights from our board meetings. I'm Neely Shaw, Executive Technical Director at the IASB, and joining me today in the hot seat are Andreas Barco, Chair of the IASB, and Linda Mizon-Hutter, Vice Chair of the IASB. They will be sharing their expert perspectives on our ongoing projects. You guys ready?
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. I hear the enthusiasm. So we just finished up the November 2023 board meeting over the last 3 days, where the board discussed 8 projects on our work plan. In this episode, we'll take a deep dive into 3 of these projects. And those projects are Business Combinations Under Common Control, which we shorten as BCUCC, the Post-Implementation Review of the Impairment Requirements in IFRS 9, and the Provisions Project. And then we'll wrap up by talking about an upcoming exposure draft and some recent stakeholder engagement that we have engaged in. So let's start with the first project that I mentioned, BCUCC. And to set the scene a little bit, let's talk about what exactly this project is about. And I think the easiest way to explain it is with an example. So imagine you have a parent with subsidiary A and subsidiary B, and subsidiary A transfers a business that it owns to its sister subsidiary B. The question that we're looking at is how subsidiary B accounts for that business, that so-called acquisition of a business, in its standalone financial statements. So at the parent level and the parent's consolidated financial statements, we know what we do. This whole transaction would get eliminated in consolidation. But in the standalone subsidiary B financial statements, the question is, what do? Do you apply IFRS 3 and the acquisition method accounting for this at fair value, or predecessor basis? And if so, then how would you do that? And the answer is that IFRS accounting standards do not specify what the accounting is, so there is diversity in practice. So with that background, Andreas, we had a really interesting discussion in November. Maybe if we work backwards, if you can start with the punchline about what the board decided, and then we can go into some of the color and nuance around that decision.
Yep, happy to. So long story short, the IASB decided to discontinue the project. We continuously assess whether the benefits of standard setting outweigh the cost based on thorough evidence, outreach, and technical analysis. In the case of BCUCC, the cost-benefit equation was in favor of stopping the project. That obviously is a big decision and was a really tough one to make. To give our listeners a better understanding, let me quickly recap that the IASB published a discussion paper in 2020 to explore the possible accounting for these BCUCC transactions to get feedback from our stakeholders. The discussion paper set out a preliminary view in which BCUCCs would typically be accounted for at book value unless an external party or non-controlling shareholder is part of the transaction, so if there is some third-party influence. We discussed that feedback in 2021 and 2022. Now, the feedback revealed diverse views globally. That led us to pause and reflect whether this project could achieve what we originally hoped for, that is, whether the benefits of reducing or eliminating diversity in practice that you nearly talked about outweighed the cost of standard setting and change in the system. Feedback on the project direction was mixed. Interestingly, users of financial statements did not express strong interest in this project. For some, this is because they don't see these transactions often. For others, this is because they can work with diversity. And yet for others, this is because there is comparability within jurisdictions due to local regulation or the work of auditors and regulators. The strongest support for continuing to develop recognition and measurement requirements came from regulators who incur costs and encounter challenges resulting from the lack of specific requirements for BCUCCs.
Thanks, Andreas. And that really sets out a difficult path forward when we already know that our stakeholders have very different views about what to do. So, Linda, we did explore some possible alternatives, some possible middle grounds that we could pursue to take the project forward. Can you share a little bit more about what that thought process was?
Sure, I'm happy to do that, Neely. As a middle ground, we considered ways to simplify the project. For example, we could explore a project that provides an option or just requires entities to apply a book value method to all BCUCCs. However, even simpler requirements would have drawbacks. For example, they might not fully meet user information needs or might disrupt practice in jurisdictions where it is already settled. In and of itself, disruption is not an obstacle for continuing a project. That's what standard setters do. But the board considered whether the benefits of this project outweighed the costs of disruption and also not fully meeting user needs. Another option we considered was shifting the project direction to only develop disclosure requirements. Now, this could improve transparency, but it would not alleviate the costs stakeholders such as regulators are incurring today. The board also considered whether such a project was really necessary because although there are no specific disclosure requirements to BCUCCs, there are general requirements in, for example, IS1 and IS24. The ISB considered all of the costs and benefits together, including the cost for stakeholders to continue to engage in the development of requirements, the cost of implementing requirements, the ongoing costs of applying standards, which may be reduced by clear requirements, and the ongoing benefits for users. And reflecting on all of that, ultimately the ISB decided to stop the project. This decision has not been taken lightly, and it follows extensive consultation with stakeholders. The decision doesn't mean entities can report BCUCCs however they like. They still have to consider the general requirements in IAS 8.
Thank you both. So as a next step, the staff will prepare a project summary, which will detail the feedback that we've heard and the rationale behind the IASB's decision. So let's move on now to the second project that I had flagged, which is the post-implementation review of the impairment requirements in IFRS 9. And just to remind everyone, the purpose of a post-implementation review is to assess whether the requirements are working as intended. So to provide some context, the impairment requirements in IFRS 9 were introduced, as many of you might recall, in response to the global financial crisis. The objective was to achieve a more timely recognition of credit losses by introducing a forward-looking impairment model that is based on expected rather than incurred credit losses. This month, the board discussed feedback on the request for information about how these requirements are working in practice. The board began the PIR, or post-implementation review, of these requirements in the second half of 2022. And in May of 2023, the board published this request for information that I mentioned to seek stakeholder views on these requirements. The comment period closed in September. And so, as I mentioned, we are now discussing the feedback that we heard from that RFI, or request for information. So Linda, can you share some of the feedback that we heard and the next steps in this project?
Absolutely. Stakeholders' feedback on the PIR was largely positive, with no fatal flaws identified. Respondents said the requirements result in timely recognition of credit loss requirements and result in useful information about the effect of credit risk on future cash flows. Respondents also said that applying the requirements during the COVID-19 pandemic and recent geopolitical and economic uncertainties have demonstrated that the model is sound. Some stakeholders identified areas where there is a potential for improvements, recommending that the ISB consider providing more application guidance or illustrative examples in those areas to support consistent application. The board did not make any decisions at the November meeting. Starting early next year, the ISB will discuss the detailed feedback in 2024 and decide what, if any, action it might take in response to the detailed feedback. The ISB expects to complete these discussions by the end of the second quarter in 2024. At the end of this post-implementation review, the ISB will publish a project report and feedback statement. I encourage our listeners to keep track of our progress by following our discussions in the coming year.
Thanks, Linda. And I think that's a really encouraging feedback to hear that the impairment requirements are working well in practice and that they've even been tested through some very difficult events like the COVID-19 pandemic and it sort of stood the test of those events. Why don't we move on to our last project, which is the provisions project. The objective of this project is to make targeted improvements to IS 37. So Andreas, could you talk us through what the ISB is considering?
Certainly. The first improvement would be to amend and clarify the requirements and guidance supporting the present obligational recognition criterion, leading to timelier recognition of provisions for some levies. Preparers of financial statements would benefit from clearer requirements in the amended IAS 37, which would lead to more consistent application, and as a result, users would benefit from greater comparability. Another improvement we are considering would involve standardizing the rates entities use to discount future cash flows to present to their present value, which would improve the comparability of the measures of long-term provisions. Following extensive consultations with stakeholders, we made a tentative decision on discount rates at the November meeting. The board tentatively decided to develop proposals to require an entity use a rate that reflects the time value of money, represented by what we call a risk-free rate, with no adjustment for non-performance risks. Unlike rates that include non-performance risk, risk-free rates are observable in the market. Government bond rates are generally a good proxy of that. So risk-free rates are simpler for preparers of financial statements to calculate, and the resulting estimates are less subjective. The board will continue its deliberations on the project and will soon decide on the project direction, that is, whether to go ahead with an exposure draft of the proposed amendments.
Thanks, Andreas. So if you are interested in digging deeper into any of these topics that we've discussed today or any of the other projects that we've discussed at the November meeting, please visit our website. Just wanted to highlight one other project for you to be aware of, and that is our project on financial instruments with characteristics of equity, or FICE for short. The board is publishing an exposure draft later towards the end of this month, where we will put forth our proposed amendments for revisions to IAS 32 on the classification of financial instruments as either liability or equity. And we look forward to hearing you during the 120-day comment period. Now let's turn to stakeholder events. As always, our board members and staff are meeting regularly with our stakeholders via consultative groups as well as in separate meetings. And we very much appreciate the time that each of you takes to meet with us and provide us with feedback. We find these engagements to be very insightful and very helpful in shaping and crafting the development of the standards. One of the big topics that has been discussed quite a bit recently is our primary financial statements project. And Linda, you've been doing quite a bit of outreach on this topic. Do you want to share some feedback that you're hearing?
Really happy to do that, Neely. And the discussions have been very interesting and very fruitful and in different jurisdictions. And one of the things that has been consistent in those discussions has to do with this notion of operating profit. And as you know, Neely, operating profit is a key feature of what's going to be IFRS 18 and the notion that we will introduce a comparable operating profit measure. Now, some jurisdictions have already defined operating profit in their own way. And of course, because it's jurisdictional, it's different at each of these jurisdictions. But we had some really fruitful discussions about how these jurisdictions can still tell their story by using the features in what's going to be IFRS 18 with additional subtotals and using management-defined performance measures. So I'm hopeful that we can keep having these discussions and keep helping our stakeholders understand how to use IFRS 18 and still tell their story. So I came away from this with very positive feelings.
And thank you again to all of our stakeholders who have been part of those discussions, as well as the other consultative group meetings that we've had over the past month. So that's it for this month. We hope you enjoyed hearing about our latest developments from the IASB. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, share, and rate us on your preferred app. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more listeners like you. And join us again next month to learn about the December board meeting. Until then, take care and goodbye from us.